Canmore. Doors will open on the left.
How's it going, everybody? Welcome to episode 8 of Entering Kenmore. I am David Azer alongside Zach Coe. Zach, quick turnaround this time around. Our schedule is lined up well. So we're back and some more spring training storylines to unpack. We could start with Tristan Casas because some comments came out earlier this week. Actually, I believe it was last week on the Greg Hill Show. Craig Breslow was on and he mentioned that the goal for Tristan Casas is 40 homers and 120 RBIs, which seems steep. I don't know how you feel about that.
Yeah, I mean, it seems steep. Like, it seems like a lot. Like, obviously, if you're saying that, like, I don't think he's saying that's what they're expecting, like, by any stretch. I mean, obviously, but I agree that that's Casas' ceiling. I mean, I know that you're a Casas guy. I don't know where you fall on this, but you're not going to find a bigger Tristan Casas honk than me, I don't think. Like, I really believe in Casas, and I think I said this before on the last pod or on a previous episode or anywhere, but I think there's a non-zero chance that Casas has a not only a better year than Vladdy, but, like, from this point moving on, has a better career than Vladdy. Like, I just believe in Tristan Casas that much, and I don't think that would be too much of, or, like, that wouldn't be a ridiculous argument after Casas's rookie year, especially with Vladdy's down year. But I don't know, it just, the whole narrative around Casas pisses me off, especially the whole, like, oh, let's just flip him for a season of Vladdy. So you have Casas under team control for another 4 years. So to flip him for one season of a guy that you're then going to have to pay, like, what, $470 million for is just...
At minimum, I would say.
Yeah, so I'm just... It's just not something I'm interested in even a little bit. And to hear that... we know the team believes in Casas because they wouldn't put up with some of the media bullshit that they do if they didn't. Like, it would be something that Cora would be like... Yeah, like, I don't know, we need to talk to him and we need to sit him down and tell him to shut the fuck up every now and then. But he didn't. He was just like, yeah, like, that's Casas. I mean, he compared him to Curt Schilling, which I...
Tough comparison.
I don't agree with. Like, Tristan Casas and Curt Schilling are two completely different kinds of yappers. They're both yappers. One of them is a certified bad person. Like, regardless of what you think about Curt Schilling's political beliefs, I know where I stand on those things. What he did to Tim Wakefield in his final days alive is disgusting, disqualifying of any type of goodwill that he might have had left. Like, obviously, we know what happened with the state of Rhode Island and him fucking them over with the 38 studios and going bankrupt and just leaving them to foot the bill. But like I said, regardless of whatever you think about Curt Schilling's political views, his business ventures, whatnot, what he did to Tim Wakefield, the guy that he would have called his brother before that, literally, what was it, 2 days before Wake passed?
Yeah.
To come out and expose that, it's disqualifying as a human. So I hate the comp between Tristan Casas telling stories about, like, his dad getting arrested at Little League games for yelling and being like, oh, yeah, Curt Schilling exposed his former teammate's terminal brain cancer, and he had to spend his last 3 days alive dealing with that nonsense. So I don't like that comp. But back to on the field talk, I do think that is attainable for Casas. And obviously, health is going to be the big question with him. He hasn't been able to stay healthy for the full year yet, but last year was kind of a fluke injury with the rib thing. And I mean, it was a rib cartilage injury. So it's not just like, oh, like, well, a broken rib takes X amount of time to heal. We really don't know how long rib cartilage takes to heal. It's a case by case basis. And obviously with him, it took longer, but, like, at the end of the day, who cares? It was a lost season anyways, by the time he got back, like, the deadline had passed, you didn't do enough to bolster yourself. And he came back and was really effective. So it's a lofty goal when you say it like that, but I think it's 100% attainable for him.
Going off of that, too, Craig Breslow on the Greg Hill Show mentioned that about his comments to the media that that's just Casas. And if he does attain these goals that Breslow has set, then you're going to forget about all of the media outbursts or whatever's going on with that. And they're not going to stop. So it's like, why even really address it? But Casas did respond to this, I believe it was yesterday, And I have the quote here. So he said, "I think that is the expectation for the first baseman of the Boston Red Sox. I think if I'm able to do that, if I'm not able to do that, then I don't deserve a job here. I don't feel that's out of my reach. I feel like that's something that's very possible for me to accomplish. I appreciate Breslow's vote of confidence in myself, but that is the caliber of hitter that I need to be to stay in the position that I am. I put in plenty of work to be able to go out there and accomplish it, but it's just a matter of staying healthy and being out there on the field for, say, 150 plus games. I think that's very reasonable." And those are the exact comments you want to hear from a guy like that, a guy who hasn't stayed healthy yet. But when he puts it all together, you know that he is capable of doing the goal that Breslow has set. And I think we're very much forgetting how much upside he has. We've been beating that drum since everybody's been calling for his head all offseason when he's been having these weird media responses. And those aren't going to stop. We've addressed that a bunch before, and I'm really not concerned about it. But I think let's just remind ourselves the caliber of player Casas can be. Because like Zach said, I think it is a very comparable upside to Vladdy. And you're getting him for a hell of a lot less. So I don't think we should be so quick to be like, oh, if Casas has this type of year, then let's just flip him for Vladdy, or let's sign Vladdy and move Casas now because we don't need him. Like, I don't see the point of that. If you have a much more cost-controlled guy, you can afford to upgrade elsewhere and still have the same type of hitter.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I'm just looking at a couple different projections for him. First of all, I don't know what Baseball Reference is smoking with some of their projections. Yeah. Because they had Garrett Crochet projected for like 7 wins this year. Their numbers for Tristan Casas read 17 home runs, 48 RBI in 372 plate appearances, 14 doubles, 255 average, 815 OPS. But if you look at his 162 average over, I mean, obviously, like we said, it's the big question is staying healthy, but his 162 average is 250 with an 830 OPS, a 125 OPS plus, 22 doubles, 31 bombs, 80 RBI. So obviously the Baseball Reference projections are pretty down on Casas, but looking at his Zips projection for the year, it has him at 20 bombs, 50 runs, 58 RBIs. That's also lower than I think a lot of people are expecting. So it's just, I have to imagine that the health is baked into things here. And I mean, obviously we know how, or maybe not everybody knows how those work, but with the projections, we know that that's the median projection. So like the middle outcome. And I would guess that we're looking more at like a 70th percentile outcome for Casas this year, if he can stay healthy. And I just don't understand the hate. I know I've said it over and over and over again on this podcast, and you just said it earlier, but everyone's going to shut up so quickly about Tristan Casas if he hits 35 bombs and 100 yep. RBIs. Like, he doesn't even have to reach that 40 bombs. But you know the haters and the radio personalities and anybody that's looking to drum up a controversy if he falls short of that 40 home runs, 120 RBIs. And I said this when you said it to me yesterday and sent me the quote. If he does that, he's an MVP candidate. 40 bombs, 120 RBIs. So if he's not an MVP candidate this year, people are still going to be mad about it. But I think anything that he does shy of getting hurt and missing another extended period of time is going to be a very productive player and a guy that's going to pretty quickly make everybody shut up. Like, I call them Joey Votto, Freddie Freeman on the last pod. And it's amazing how quickly people forget that these are the comps that Casas was getting as he was making his way through the system. It doesn't make any sense to me. And we sit here and get excited about Marcelo Meyer, Christian Campbell, Roman Anthony, and Tristan Casas is right there with those guys. Like, Casas was a top 30 MLB prospect before he got called up. Like, this isn't some scrub that we're talking about because he's had a fluke injury. That's what we're talking about here. A top 30 prospect that had a fluke injury that had no set timetable for return. And he's a yapper. Like, that's what we're worried about. Like, he likes to talk. And what are we doing right now? If you're on the radio talking about Tristan Casas, you're like, oh, he runs his mouth in the media, he's a yapper. That's your job. You're professional yappers. We are professional yappers. Like, this is what happens. Like, I just don't. It just I'm gonna get all right. Every episode, I'm gonna get riled up about the Tristan Casas hate because he's probably my favorite player on the team right now, and I feel like I'm not the only one, but like, I feel like all the rational people understand that, and all the people that don't know what they're talking about hate him. And there's nothing that pisses me off more than people that don't know what they're talking about when they talk about the Boston Red Sox. They get platformed to run their mouths about it and just talk absolute nonsense. And part of it is because we follow it so closely, and I like understand that not everybody is going to buckle up for 162 games. And I'm going to get into the spring training stuff and how the game wasn't on Nesson today. But like, I understand that not everyone wants to tune in for a March 5th spring training game to watch Garrett Crochet pitch three innings. I understand that I'm an outlier in that sense, but it just bothers me when people get mad at him for like such bullshit of like, oh, he said what he would do in the with the lineup. Like, well, he's not the manager, and everybody knows he's not the manager, and he knows he's not the manager. He got asked a question, what would you do with the lineup? He answered it. Like, what do you want him to do? Like, oh, that's not my job. That's the manager's job. Like, dude, who cares? He has a personality. Like, he gave his opinion. Who cares?
Yeah, and I don't understand why people are associating Cassis hitting this potential goal with just upping his trade value. Like, here's a scenario. What if Tristan Cassis does hit 40 homers and 120 RBIs, and you have that guy for the next 4+ years on a rookie contract before he hits free agency? Like, I don't know why that concept is so astronomical for people to grasp their head around.
To immediately just be like, oh, that'd be great if he hits 40 bombs. That way we can get him the fuck out of town. It's like, how are you people spinning this? He runs his mouth. Get him the fuck out of town. He's an MVP candidate. Get him the fuck out of town. Like, what are we doing here? Like, so what? He's going to make, depending on what his ARB numbers come in at, I mean, and obviously if he's hitting 40 bombs a year, those ARB numbers are going to be pretty hefty. We know that, like, I think it was Mookie set the record in after the 2018 season, making 30 mil on ARB. So like, obviously if that's the type of player we're talking about, we're going to be talking about a $30 million ARB towards the end of his service time, obviously. But to be like, oh good, then we can get him out of here and bring in Vladdy for $700 million. And he's older and potentially worse at that point. And like, and it's all going to be like, well, he's a righty and he's Vladdy. Like, Vladdy comes with so much more name value than Tristan Cassis because of his dad. And it's not to say that I don't like Vladimir Guerrero Jr. I think he's a very good, great player. Like, I think he's going to be a fantastic player, but I'm just not discounting the fact that not only could Tristan Cassis also be a great player, just as good as Vladdy, but he's also under team control for 4 more years. So it doesn't really make any sense to throw $470 million at a first baseman. We just saw Pete Alonso struggle to get 5 years because of the name value. Like, especially when you have a guy of Cassis's ability, especially if you consider the fact that the GM, the team, is saying, we think this is a guy that can hit 40 bombs.
Right, and imagine the protection in the lineup that Cassis will be getting this year. Like, he's only going to do better with being protected by Devers, Bregman, and everybody else in that lineup. Duran, Abreu. Like, I just think this is the real season to just shut everybody up. And I'm looking forward to it because I think it is absolutely going to happen. I'm going to enjoy every second of it, like I know you are, Zach.
Oh, my God. I'm going to be insufferable. Awesome. You know what? Hot take right now. Calling it right now. Tristan Cassis, all-star.
Ooh. I might be right there with you. I know we have roster predictions later. Quick tease there. But another person that's been involved with Tristan Cassis is Rafael Devers because of the whole media fiasco. And Devers was supposed to make his spring training debut yesterday. They were talking a lot about his shoulder injuries and how that was sustained last season, and he's never fully recovered from it up to this point. And Cora was saying that, kind of hyping it up for a little while, that Devers was going to make his spring training debut yesterday, and he didn't. So now we're like, what the hell's going on? Because now it's like his status is sort of in question because he hasn't played today. And now we're unsure when it's really going to happen. And my Bregman third base agenda just keeps growing.
Yeah. Yeah, Cora said that Devers went to him and said he still felt like he was a step behind in live BP, so he wanted to get some more reps, and he's not there yet, and I'm fine slow playing it because we know the kind of player Rafael Devers is. I gave the stats for the first half before that shoulder injury really got bad for him. In the second half, and we know how poorly he played there, but he was on a top five MVP finish trajectory. He was on a career year trajectory in that first half of the year. And then obviously in the second half, the shoulder started barking. And like, ultimately it's March 5th. We have 22 days until opening day. I'm not overly concerned about Devers being ready for opening day because I think he will be. And if it means that he doesn't have to play in, or he can't play in a March 4th game against the Pirates in Bradenton, or a March 5th game against whatever scrub the Rays started today, like in spring training, it is what it is. I think he's going to be ready on opening day. I do think that it just lends more and more credence to the fact that he should DH, and he should want a DH. Like, you're now going on a year of having this nagging shoulder injury because you injured yourself in the field. Like, why is he going to sit there and complain about, oh, I want to play third base, I want to play third base? Like, it, and I know I said that I don't think it's going to linger into the regular season, but God forbid it does. So now you're missing regular season games in the next season because you dove for a ball awkwardly and fucked up your shoulder. Like, it just, it doesn't make sense. Out of all cities to play in, and all the teams to play in to complain about being a DH, like, this isn't the one. And it's weird to me that he was dragging his feet on it to begin with, and it's gonna continue to be weird to me until they eventually just DH him. And I think that that's the path we're heading down at this point.
Yeah. Another hot take with the Casas All-Star one is Rafael Devers will be the opening day DH. I think at this point we're looking at least another week until he makes his spring training debut. But to me, it will probably take even longer just because they don't want to rush him back. And at that point, you have like 2 weeks left in spring training before opening day. They're not going to want to mess with it. I think he'll start as a DH and Bregman's going to be the third baseman. And he's never going to give the position back unless he ultimately leaves. And I'm totally okay with that.
It's one of those things too, where I don't think it's going to be like Rafael Devers is not never going to play third base again. Like, I think that his ability to play third base is like, it's obviously not good, but Bregman's not going to play 162. And if he does, he's probably going to circle in at DH just to keep him fresh. Other guys, you're going to, like, in this scenario, we're going to have Masataka Yoshida on the bench. Like, you're paying him $18 million. He's going to work his way into the lineup at some point. So I think you're going to see the lineup mix and match a little bit, and that's going to include Devers at third base. Like, an easy benchmark to use for fantasy baseball players is the 10 games of eligibility at third base. Like, I think going into next season, he'll maintain third base eligibility for fantasy purposes, which means he played at least 10 games. Like, I would guess he's going to get in the 30 to 40 ish games at third base with when everything's said and done. Like, ultimately I think Yoshida, he might start the year on the team, but I can't imagine he's going to finish the year on the team, especially once the deadline rolls around, like, and teams are desperate for bats and maybe you find a match to add a reliever, because I know we're going to get into the bullpen, but it hasn't been a pretty picture for some of these guys in the closer conversation. A couple guys that everyone perceived to be the favorites for that closer job in Hendricks and Chapman. I know Chapman hasn't given up a run yet, but like, they've struggled a decent bit. So do you match something up with later in the season as the picture becomes more clear for a bunch of teams with Yoshida probably? But like I said, I don't think this means the end of Rafael Devers playing third base, but for the good of the team, for the good of the player, there's no negative spin to Rafael Devers being the DH on opening day.
Exactly. Like, I'm so sick of it. I'm so sick of it, honestly, because this shouldn't be a storyline this far into spring training. And I guess it wouldn't be a storyline if Devers was playing and we had more of a clear picture of this, but now it's going to be a lingering thing pretty much all season, I think.
And even when Cora was originally talking last week about him making his debut yesterday, which obviously didn't happen, he was very non-committal about him playing third base in that debut. So I think he was probably going to be a DH in the lineup yesterday if he was in it, and probably would have been today if he was in it. So, like, I think they're going to obviously they're slow playing him playing in spring training games because, like we've been talking about, who cares? It's spring training. It's March 5th against the Tampa Bay Rays. And they trotted out. Let's see who they trotted out there today. Who did Devers miss some at-bats against? I know the losing pitcher was Mike Vassell. Shout out Mike Vassell, BC High legend, Massachusetts legend. Rule 5.
Joe Boyle.
Yeah. Okay, so that's at least a major league quality arm. But like, no, Rafael Devers didn't get – he missed a couple ABs against Joe Boyle and – I don't even know who this is. Joey Crabile, 32-year-old with a 4.5 ERA in spring training. Like, and then obviously, like I said, Massachusetts legend, Mike Vassell. Who cares? Like, honestly, who cares? Like, I'm confident in Rafael Devers. We know the type of player he is. And if he's not playing on March 5th, I'm not going to press the panic button, but I am going to say that the shoulder injury has lingered far too long, and it's because you suck in the field, and it's because you got injured in the field. So if you have an opportunity to eliminate that happening again, you should take every opportunity to do so.
Yeah, and I think they're going to force the issue. When Devers is back, they're going to be like, no, you're not risking this again. We want you for a full season. You're going to play DH, and if you want to piss and moan about it, that's fine, but it's not changing.
Yeah, I think we all agree, looking at our roster predictions, I know we both agree that all three of Meyer, Campbell, and Anthony are going to start in AAA, but those guys aren't going to be in AAA for the entire season.
Like, Absolutely not.
I think at least one of those guys is up by the May 2nd or whatever the deadline is to have guys up and still qualify for the draft pick compensation. You're the Boston Red Sox. We shouldn't be fucking around with service time. If these guys are ready to come up and contribute to your major league team, it shouldn't be, oh, well, we can get them for 7 years instead of six on arbitration. And like we talked about with Casas, if these guys actually pan out, that extra year, you're going to be paying them $30 million anyways, because that's what the arbitration number is for top of the league players in their last couple of years of arb, or in their last year of arb. So like, I don't think you should slow play it because of that, but I think one of these, at least one of Meyer, Campbell, or Anthony, I would guess it's going to be one of Campbell or Anthony, are going to be up by May. So like, what are you going to do then? Like, if it's Campbell, he plays second base and Bregman moves to third, or he moves, I don't want to spoil our roster prediction, but he moves whoever you have at second onto the bench, and however you want to slice it, it's going to sort itself out. Like, that's the great thing about baseball. The season's 162 games long. These issues, good problems to have, they sort themselves out, and eventually it's going to sort itself out with Rafael Devers being the DH.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you there. Another guy who has not made his spring training debut yet is Willier Abreu. And we do have an update on him, right, Zach?
Yeah, let me get the exact quote, but he was talking today. He said he didn't think that his opening day was going to be in jeopardy. And this was actually from a couple weeks ago. He said he thought that the weight loss that he had from that gastrointestinal infection that he had would actually be good for him, which I don't necessarily know that I agree with, but it's something that he thinks, which I guess if he thinks that, then all the power to him, as my keyboard won't pop up on my computer. But he said that he thought he had plenty of time. I'll summarize since I can't get the exact quote. He said he thought he had plenty of time to get ready for opening day and that he's not ruling it out. I think I'm willing to rule it out because I think you have other options in the outfield. Before our last episode, when I did my roster predictions, I had Roman Anthony in left field, thinking that Abreu was going to be out for a little bit longer of a period. But with the way that both he and Alex Cora are talking so far, it seems like if he's not ready on opening day, he's just going to be ready like a week later. And depending on when they put him on that IL, if they do, they can put him retroactively. So like, if they think he only needs 5 days, they can put him retroactive to March 22nd or whatever it may be, so that the 10 days is up sooner. So I don't want to spoil the roster predictions, but I do think maybe he starts on the IL, but I don't think it's going to be long enough of an absence to where you need Roman Anthony, because if Roman Anthony's starting the year on your roster, I don't think you're just sending him down in a week.
Yeah, it also helps that the Nate Eatons, the Trace Thompsons of the world are having very good starts to their spring. So even if you do have to give them an extra week or so and you just bring one of those guys for the ride for a little bit, which, you know, I kind of hate to be like, yeah, we'll just have them as placeholders until Abreu's back. But ultimately, where is their spot after he does return? Did you have anything else on Abreu?
No, this is a guy that I think we were both pretty surprised to still be on the roster at this point in the season. Yeah. And him and Cutter Crawford were two guys that were in every single mock trade. And obviously there's still an outfield logjam, but like I said, it's a good problem to have. It's probably something that sorts itself out at some point one way or another. And if it doesn't sort itself out, then you have a really valuable trade chip. You have a guy who I know he was pretty sheltered against lefties last year. I think he can hit lefties. I think he'll be that player. And obviously we know the caliber glove he is out there. Won the gold glove in one of the toughest right fields in baseball in his first season. So
yeah, I'm not worried about it, but I do like the idea of not rushing him back just because you have other options and you don't want to make it a whole season type of thing where he, like with Vaughn Grissom, like he had a similar, it might have been the same.
It was pretty similar.
Yeah, and he never returned to form last year. So
lost 20 pounds.
Yeah, so you don't want that lingering for the whole year. Give him the time to get back and it'll sort itself out then, like Zach said. But another thing that is going to need some fixing is the bullpen because, like Zach said, the big, quote-unquote big, additions to the bullpen in Aroldis Chapman and Liam Hendricks have both been struggling. And those were the two guys that people were sort of slotting into that closer role in roster predictions. And both of them have not looked good thus far.
No, Hendricks, I think, has looked worse than Chapman. Chapman has been Aroldis Chapman. I know another clean inning today, so he's up to 3 2/3 with no runs allowed, 4 walks though. So like that's just what Aroldis Chapman is. He's gonna walk everybody. I did that with Craig Kimbrell. I'm not really interested in seeing Aroldis Chapman close games for the Red Sox because you know it's gonna be a heart attack every time he's out there. But Liam Hendricks has not at all helped his case. I know these aren't updated numbers with today, but coming in today, 3 innings pitched, 12 earned runs in a .500 opponent batting average. And I know the guy hasn't pitched in 2 years, but that was the concern with him stepping into this closer role is that he hasn't pitched in 2 years. So that concern is obviously been warranted at this point. So I don't really know where you turn. And every single, like the entire offseason, every time after Crochet, so you added Crochet, you added Buehler, it felt like there was a couple more moves you needed to make. And Breslow said it, and he said, we want to add a right-handed bat, and we want to add to the bullpen. Well, they added the right-handed bat in Bregman, and everyone's like, all right, what's the next chip to fall? There was Padres trade rumors getting Robert Suarez and Dylan Cease. Nothing ever materialized out of that other than just rumors, and obviously we know Bradfo ended up pouring some cold water on that Cease rumor that it was overblown at the time, and I would love Dylan Cease. I was pretty clear about that when the rumors came out. I would also love Michael King, but that extra bullpen arm just never came. For whatever reason, it didn't show up. David Robertson's still sitting out there. There are guys out there. I guess there's a guy out there in Robertson that you could bring in, but that's kind of like more what you have. Like, what is 38-year-old David Robertson going to do? He's just going to compete for your job. Where you are lucky to have is Luis Guerrero and Justin Slayton. Guerrero has looked really, really good in his couple of appearances. Slayton only made the one. I know that you looked up the Slayton stats, and I'm going to get into this too, that the games aren't broadcast. And like I said, I understand I'm in the 1% of people that actually want to watch these games, but it's for the purpose of doing podcasts, it's so much more difficult to keep track of who's going where and like who's doing what when you're not watching the games. But I think Guerrero's looked good. The ERA has been, it's up. Like, obviously, he's given up some runs. It's a 5-4 ERA, but 7 strikeouts and 3 1/3. And he's a guy that I was high on coming into the season. And I think eventually he is going to be a closer for maybe not the Red Sox, but he's going to be a major league closer. Like, I think the stuff is that good. So I think he's an option that has really stepped up and kind of cemented himself right in that mix. And then obviously Justin Slayton, who was a guy that Cora mentioned at the beginning of the season with Chapman and Hendricks as guys that are going to be in the mix. And I know they don't want to use Whitlock like that, but if nobody really like takes a command of that job, then I think maybe they'll just have to go with Whitlock. And maybe even if it's just Whitlock 8-9, because you still want to use him in the multi-inning role. But I do want to say I think the leader in the clubhouse right now is Justin Slayton, 2 clean innings. Hasn't struck anybody out yet, but 2 clean innings, my dark horse prediction from, was it 2 or 3 episodes ago, of Justin Slayton will lead the Red Sox in saves this year. Looking pretty good so far.
And I'm with you there. Like, I honestly don't hate giving Guerrero or Slayton the starter job from the start, just because you're going to have them around for a lot longer than Chapman and Hendricks, especially at this point. If they're not giving you anything, then why even bother? So where I'm at right now with Whitlock, though, is I do like him more in that you know, lengthy reliever role rather than a closer, just because when, if he goes two innings to close out a game, he's going to be on the shelf for 2-3 days at that point. And then you're basically doing a closer by committee anyway. So I would rather have a guy that just gives you a clean ninth inning, or at least has the capability to give you a clean ninth inning every other day or what have you. So I would be totally fine with either of those guys as a closer. And ultimately, I do think that Hendricks will figure it out. I think it's tough coming back from a 2-year hiatus and you know, just being nailed right when you start. So I'm more high on Hendricks than Chapman. Chapman, we know what he is. It's never going to change at this point. And I can just do without the heart attack in the ninth inning. If you want to do the heart attack, do it in the seventh and at least have some opportunity to come back if shit hits the fan.
Yeah, and even with that, like say shit hits the fan in the seventh with Chapman, that's a great opportunity for a guy like Whitlock to come in, mm-hmm. be the fireman, come in, cover 7-8, and then hopefully bridge you to your closer in the ninth. Or if things don't go the way you're going and you have Whitlock pitching one and two thirds in through the seventh and the eighth after Chapman implodes and you're already out of it, you might as well just trot him back out there for the ninth. Cause like you said, he's already going to be on the shelf for a couple days after pitching some length there. So like, you might as well just save the rest of the bullpen and have him finish that one out. A couple other guys I wanted to mention, Josh Winkowski and Justin Wilson, have been fucking abominations.
Yep.
And I know, like, there's a couple weird Josh Winkowski defenders. And don't get me wrong, at one point I was a Josh Winkowski defender. I'm a recovered Josh Winkowski defender. I will never again defend Josh Winkowski. This guy sucks. He's bad.
Yep.
No good, very bad, awful. And in this spring, 5 innings, a 10 ERA. He's giving up just ridiculously hard contact. He's just been no good, very bad. And when you have a couple veterans in the mix with Matt Moore, Adam Ottavino, that are competing for roster spots, it just doesn't feel like there's a spot for Winkowski, especially when he still has options, because eventually you're going to want to play the roster game and the option game. And how do you best maximize your options? How do you best maximize your roster? And I think right now the best way to maximize your roster is to have Winkowski either. I don't think they're going to DFA him because he does still have those options. So I think right now the most likely scenario is he gets sent to AAA to try to work on some things and figure some stuff out, because a couple years ago we saw him as a really dependable reliever for the team. And obviously that team wasn't very good. So like, if Josh Winkowski is a dependable reliever for you, like, what does that say about your team? And we know what it says about that team. They weren't very good. I just told you. But maybe there's a trade partner out there for a player to be named later, a rookie ball, a Dominican summer league guy with a high ceiling, just anything. But Winkowski he looks like he hates being here. He looks like he doesn't want to be here. He's been terrible. And then the other guy I mentioned, Justin Wilson, who was it the first move that they made this offseason?
Yep.
So not only do you commit a 40-man spot to Justin Wilson, he's the first guy you go out and sign in free agency. He's been terrible as well. As I pull up the stats here, and it's just, you needed a lefty, you needed a more dependable lefty. But, and I know our guy Christian Arcand has been beating the drum of Cam Boozer. Why do you get rid of Cam Boozer to bring in Aroldis Chapman? Boozer was a better story, obviously, coming. And I think I've beat this drum on this podcast before too, a guy who got suspended for a year for smoking weed. Like, I know it's 2015, but like, what are we doing in the big 2015 suspending guys for a year for smoking weed? Aroldis Chapman didn't get suspended for a year for unloading a fucking clip in his garage because he got mad at his wife. Like, what are we fucking doing here? A year for smoking weed. But you need a left-handed reliever, and you go out and you trade Cam Boozer for, like, I forget his great name, whatever the kid's name was, but like, eventually it was a 17-year-old pitcher in the Dominican Summer League. And you bring in Justin Wilson, you commit a 40-man spot to him. He's got a 13 ERA in 2 2/3 innings so far. So, like, how's that one working out for you? This is a guy that 37 years old. He's been fine in his career, 513 innings pitched, 3.61, but at 37 years old, I think it's perfectly fair to say he's over the hill. And this is a guy that you committed a 40-man spot to, and it was the very first move that you went out and made. Just doesn't make sense to me, and he's looking like a guy you're just going to DFA on March 26th.
Yeah, and I mean, I said this last episode too, that it just pissed me off that this was their first move and he's already on the 40-man roster. I guess you don't lose much from DFAing him. You paid him, you committed like $1 million to him, so it is what it is. You're the Boston Red Sox, as we keep saying, and it's not our money, so who gives a shit?
Yeah, not me.
But I did find the name of the guy that the Red Sox got for Cam Boozer. It's in the podcast notes. I don't even want to try to read it. I'm not going to lie.
I mean, yeah, I'll give it a whirl. Apologies.
It starts with a Y, but I just...
there it is. Oh, boy.
Yeah, you see what I mean? Like, this is...
Yoiker Fajardo.
I think that plays. That's what I was thinking, but I didn't want to...
Fajardo.
That is an A1 name if I've ever seen one. So,
and but I don't know. And it's, I think it's a fair point with Chapman too, but it's an even more fair point to be like, why are we getting rid of Cam Boozer for, and not to say that like, I'm sure I trust Breslow. I trust Bodie. I trust Bailey. I trust the pitching lab that they're building here. I mean, look at the arms that are coming up in the Cubs system. Justin Steele turned from nothing into an ace overnight. Yeah. Obviously, they have Cade Horton coming up. They have some other intriguing arms between Hayden Wesneski, Jordan Wicks, and a couple other guys that I'm sure I'm forgetting, but I believe in the system, and I'm sure that they saw something in 18-year-old Yoiker Fajardo, however you say this fella's name. Great name, but I'm sure they saw something in him, but I just don't know why Cam Boozer is the guy that goes, especially for a guy in Justin Wilson that is bad. No good, bad, very bad.
Yeah, and someone to add in that Cubs pitching lab is Imanaga, who was like, yeah, this is kind of a nothing signing, and then he was really good pretty much all of last year. I know he kind of hit a wall later in the year, but still another guy that exceeded expectations last year with the Cubs. Did we want to get into roster predictions now?
I think so. I think that's good. We covered pretty much everything, I think.
Yeah. We fired those off pretty quick. So
Crochet, real quick.
Oh, yes. This so Garrett Crochet pitched 3 innings of work today against the Tampa Bay Rays. He had 7 strikeouts through 3 innings. So pretty basically good. Just he is delivering on everything that he was promised to at this point. And I'm just so amped up to see him in the regular season because this is the ace the Red Sox have been needing for a long time now, since Chris Sale was getting injured, riding his bike and shit like that, whatever the hell he was doing here. We haven't had an – among other injuries, getting a comeback or off his hand, which was a fluke injury that I can't really get mad at him for. But we haven't had an ace in a long time now, and this is a guy who – when he doesn't have an innings limit by the White Sox, who just didn't know what the hell they were doing last year and wanted to protect him from a potential – to make a potential trade, now he has no innings limit. You can really see everything that he's got, and I think he's in a prove-it year because he's still working towards an extension. And right now it's looking like that's not going to get done before spring training ends, and – I know he did say on Section 10 that he was open to the idea of negotiating during the season, so I'm not going to hit the panic button on that yet, but the price tag's only going to go up if he delivers on everything that we expect him to. So,
right. I don't know if you heard him on Baseball Isn't Boring with Bradfo last week too, where he got – Bradfo asked him about – the rumors last year that he wasn't willing to pitch for a team that traded for him if he didn't sign an extension. He actually said, I'm glad you asked me that question, because in the way he answered, it was very thoughtful. It was very intelligent. It makes a lot of sense why he would want to do this. Essentially, he just said, like, I didn't want to go to a team that doesn't know me, that they don't owe anything to me, that was just going to throw me until my arm fell off again. So he wanted that protection, and it's hard to blame him with his injury history. And especially, we know he had never been stretched out like that before in his career. He had never thrown so many innings. So obviously the risk comes with that. And I think a lot of people painted him as an asshole. And I know at first I was kind of like, I don't know how I feel about that. Mm-hmm. At least at the time of the deadline, being like, that's kind of shitty to be like, I'm not going to pitch for you if you trade for me without an extension. But it definitely makes sense as far as trying to protect yourself and trying to secure a fortune for your family, your kids' families and so on and so forth. Like, we're talking about generational wealth if all pans out well for Garrett Crochet. This is a guy that's still 25 years old. He's going to hit the open market at 27. If he continues on the trajectory that he's on, he's going to break the Yamamoto record for richest contract in for a pitcher in baseball history, which is what, $331 million?
Yeah.
So this is the type of talent we're talking about. And I'd like for them to get a deal done. I understand why the Red Sox are hesitant to get a deal done, and I understand why he's hesitant to get a deal done, because I just told you, he's 25 years old. He's going to hit the open market at 27. How often do Cy Young candidates, perennial Cy Young candidates, potentially hit the open market at 27 years old? Like I said, we're talking about a guy that's going to make $330-plus million, probably going to break the record if he hits the open market. So, like I said, I understand the hesitancy on both sides. I just, like, at this point, just fucking throw 170 at him. I know when the deal was made, Jeff Passan compared him to Tyler Glasnow, who signed a 4-year, $110 million extension with the Dodgers after he was traded from the Rays. Similar injury history. Glasnow was 1 year closer to free agency. Obviously, Crochet's two. So theoretically, that would mean that Crochet should be cheaper. But like at this point, I've seen enough. I don't care if you throw 170, 200 at him over 8 years, buy out those last 2 years, and you have him for another six, I'm perfectly fine with that. You have him through his age 31, and then if he wants to hit the open market after that, then thank you for your service, Garrett. It was great having you for these last 6-8 years, and we wish you all the best. Like, I, at this point, I just think it needs to get done, and at the end of the day, you're the Boston Red Sox, so who cares? Like, just pay what he wants, like, because the price is only going up.
Yeah, yeah, and we'll see. I really haven't seen any reports about them even discussing an extension at this point. So I am leaning that it's going to get done either throughout this season or end of the year. So
yeah, Breslow was on, when he was on Greg Hill, he talked about it. He said that they have talked about it, and it's obviously something that they're open to. But with all the things that we're talking about, let me get the exact quote. Garrett has been outspoken about at least being interested in exploring whether or not there's opportunity to pursue this relationship longer term. I have as well. So they've at least kicked the tires on it. And yeah, I assume it's simply just the Red Sox are like, all right, well, you haven't proven it for a full season, so we're not willing to pay you like you have. And Crochet's like, well, I've never been stretched out before like that. My numbers took a hit last year because my innings were limited, and I have so much money to gain and so much money to make if I just hold out on this. So until they meet somewhere in the middle, I just think that's where we're going to continue to be, in some sort of stalemate. And ultimately, I don't think Crochet is the type of guy that's going to blink. And I think it's on the Red Sox to save themselves some money, because ultimately that's what they're going to do. Even if it looks like an overpay at the time, there's a really good chance that it looks like one of the best contracts in baseball for a pitcher. I mean, look at what they did with Rafael Devers. They dilly-dallied on an extension until he was a year away from free agency, and then you had to pay him $313 million. Probably could have gotten away 2 years earlier paying him $200, $210,
yeah,
anywhere around that. So it's one of those things I just prefer not to dilly-dally. I'd prefer not to wait for him to prove it. I would just, like I said, just do it.
It doesn't seem that hard, honestly. I do think that he is waiting, Crochet, to
definitely,
you know, prove it. But it's just, it doesn't seem like a standstill to me, because it's much different than, you know, a Jeremy Swayman and Bruins front office, where they were kind of just going back and forth to the media. Like, this has been kept pretty much under wraps entirely. So to me, I'm not worried about it right now. I think as it gets closer to free agency, if nothing is done, then we might be cooked. But where we're at right now, I'm okay. And I think he's going to have an absolutely big year, and that transitions well into the roster predictions. So we both made roster predictions. They are largely very similar. We do have a few outliers, though. Zach, if you wanted to start off, and I can kind of just jump in where my differences are.
Yeah, let me pull them back up right now. So I'll start with the obvious ones. First base, Tristan Casas.
Yep.
Catcher, Connor Wong. Shortstop, Trevor Story. Center field, Sidan Rafaela. Right now, I have Jaron Duran in right field, I think it is. Yeah, Duran in right field. Here's where it gets interesting. So obviously, I've left out second base, third base, left field, DH. I hinted at earlier, I think Rafael Devers is going to be the DH on opening day. I think it's going to be a bunch of different factors factoring in, the main one keeping him healthy. And if he still isn't comfortable playing the field like we knew he wasn't going to, even if he did debut, obviously he felt like he was still a step behind, so he didn't. So I have him at the DH. I have, which means obviously, I have Alex Bregman at third base.
Yep.
Second base. I think we made it pretty clear that I don't think any of the guys are, or any of the big three, be it Christian Campbell mainly, who's down to 059 on the spring after today. Just, I'm not worried about him at all. It's just, he's just not going to make the opening day roster at this point. Mm-hmm. Like, it is what it is. And we knew going into it would be an uphill battle for him, and it felt like they were going to give him every opportunity to claim that job. He hasn't yet. Not to say that that can't change. We still have 22 days until opening day. So obviously he can catch fire and get things going, and maybe he just calms down a little bit. I mean, obviously, if you listen to Cora, he's not concerned. He compared him to Jaylen Brown with work ethic and the way that he approaches things. Like, he's going to figure it out. I'm not worried about him at all. But that being said, I have David Hamilton at second base. It's kind of between him and Vaughn Grissom with the way that I have my lineup shaking out. Mm-hmm. I just haven't seen enough out of Vaughn Grissom, and I know David Hamilton started out the spring really hot, has kind of cooled off since, but this was a guy like 2 months ago on Baseball Isn't Boring that Alex Cora said was in the best shape of his life, and he looks a lot stronger, and obviously we know what he brings to the base paths. As far as his speed goes, he adds a whole nother dynamic, and I really like the idea of what they did last year, having Rafaela 8, Hamilton 9, and then you turn the lineup over with Duran, and then obviously mm-hmm. you add Bregman and Devers into the mix. It makes your lineup really deep and really complete, especially when you have that kind of speed on the base paths to set the table for the top of your lineup and your big boppers. And obviously we know what Duran brings with speed too. So I like the way that they set things up. So I think they're going to have that there. I kind of hinted at earlier, I think Abreu is going to start the year on the IL with this gastrointestinal thing. I don't think it's going to be a super long-term thing, which if we did our roster predictions in the last episode, I had Roman Anthony making the roster in left field. Mm-hmm. But I just, at the end of the day, I don't think it makes sense to have Roman Anthony up for a week or two until Abreu's healthy and then send him down regardless of outcome. Right. And you give Rafaela more time in center to figure things out. If he continues to prove that the swing and miss is an issue, which I think he's going to, then you figure it out later, but you at least give him the opportunity to work it out. And maybe Trevor Story goes down. Who knows how things happen? Like I said, these things tend to work themselves out. But with Abreu starting the year on the injured list, I have Trace Thompson making the team, starting in left field on opening day.
Here we go. I think it's very interesting.
I think it's going to come down to, you mentioned him earlier, Nate Eaton, who also is swinging a hot bat. I think he hit a grand slam two days ago, yesterday.
Yeah.
So he's been swinging a good bat too. Ultimately, I think it's between one of those two guys. Eaton hitting 267 with a 476 OBP and a 1209 OPS through 15 at-bats. And I just had Trace Thompson up, but he's shown some pop, and ultimately I just think he's shown more at the major league level, so I kind of give him the edge. But I could see either one of those guys making the roster, and it helps that they're both right-handed, so it brings some more balance to your lineup. And you might say, what about Rob Refsnyder? And I really like Rob Refsnyder, but at the end of the day, no matter how you slice it, either Refsnyder is going to be in left field and one of these guys is going to be on the bench. Mm-hmm. If one of these guys is going to be on the bench, I think they probably lean Eaton because of the speed factor. But I just put Trace Thompson because I think it's a fun story that he's Clay Thompson's brother, obviously, but I got his numbers now. 3 bombs, 6 RBIs, 300 average, 391 OBP, 1241 OPS. So jeez. I got him starting in left field on opening day. Like I said, it's just a stopgap until Abreu gets healthy, and then obviously you slide everyone over again. So Duran moves to left, which I think is a disgusting waste of his defensive ability. But when you're talking about 3 potential gold glovers in the outfield, one of them has to play in left.
Yeah.
Yes, it looks like it's going to be Duran. Rafael on center, Abreu back in right, obviously. So that's my lineup. Let's dive. Or do you want to give your lineup and then we can discuss that?
Yeah, that's cool. Okay, so pretty much all similar. I do have a couple outliers though, so I'll just go down the list. I got Wong at catcher, Casas at first base. At second base, I do have Vaughn Grissom because I think the upside is just higher with him and Hamilton. And I did put Hamilton on the bench, so that's not to say I think Hamilton is going to be a non-factor this year. I just think with the injury history and how Grissom lost all of last year, and with Chris Sale winning the Cy Young last year, they need to get some value back from Grissom. And he hasn't had a great spring, admittedly. He only has two hits, and he's hitting, you know, a buck 25 at the moment. So it's not great. But I think they just have to give him the nod at first to see what he has. Because if he struggles at first, if he's not what you think he's going to be, then you have David Hamilton to just slot right back in there. And I think you can just, you know, hit the reset button on Grissom. Maybe send him down again, but at that point, it's like maybe he's just a 4A player. I don't really know, but I do think at this point, they just have to see if there's anything there at all. And he's only 24 years old, so there is time for him to develop. I think he was the youngest player on the Red Sox roster last year, so still has a ton of time to figure it out. And I am optimistic that he just needs the reps at the major league level. So I hope they give it to him. I wouldn't be upset if Hamilton started as the everyday second baseman, and then obviously Grissom can fill in if there's an injury or whatever, because something's going to happen throughout the season. But I do have Trevor Story at shortstop, Bregman at third base. I put Rob Refsnyder in left field simply because I like him as a lefty specialist, and I don't see them just having a Trace Thompson or an Eaton as a placeholder until Abreu's back, because I don't think Abreu will have a lengthy IL stint. And, you know, why take up the extra roster spot for another outfielder when you have Yoshida on the bench? And he, apparently he's been throwing, so maybe we will see him in left at some point.
You see the video of him on Bradfo's Twitter today. Yeah. I mean, he wasn't throwing. It was like, what, 20, 30 feet?
Yeah. So it's like, I don't know where that leaves Yoshida, but I do think they're going to try him in left field at some point. So Refsnyder is kind of a placeholder slash platoon guy, because you know he's going to be on the major league roster for the entire year unless something drastically changes. He's going to be that lefty specialist throughout. I have Rafaela in center field. I hope they keep him there, to be honest, just because I got tired of him switching from infield to outfield. I think it, as much as he looked like a Gold Glover out there, switching from infield to outfield like every week just has to affect you defensively. And I think we've only scratched the surface of how good a defender he can be. And for the time being, I have Duran in right. I think, like Zach said, that will change once Abreu comes back. And it is unfortunate because Duran is another Gold Glove caliber guy out there. Could we see a potential Abreu trade through the season? Maybe. And then you put Duran in right. And Devers is going to be your DH, whether he likes it or not. I hope they stick with that for the whole year. And I'm okay with giving him, like you said, 10 to, you know, 40 games at third base, but he should not be your everyday third baseman anymore. Did you touch on your bench or no?
No, I didn't. I can quickly give mine, and then if you want to give yours. Carlos Narvaez, backup catcher. I think that one's pretty obvious. He's been really good defensively, crazy pop times. I honestly, if the bat doesn't continue for Connor Wong, I know he had a Wong dong in his first spring appearance, but if he doesn't contribute with the bat, and obviously we know he's one of the worst defensive catchers in baseball, I wouldn't be surprised to see Narvaez at some point take over that starting catching role just for defensive purposes. But for right now, I think he's on the bench there. I think he is the clear leader in the clubhouse for that backup catcher role. I haven't seen anything out of Blake Sabol that makes me think otherwise. Rob Refsnyder, obviously lefty specialist, fourth outfielder type. I understand your argument of, are they going to use Nate Eaton or Trace Thompson as placeholders? Before we started recording, we kind of talked about some of the roster moves that they could make to clear up the 40-man spots, including 60-day ILing Chris Murphy, Zach Penrod, and I forget who the other name we said was, but
Perales, I think.
Yeah, Luis Perales. So those are guys that obviously are going to get IL'd to clear up some 40-man spots. So that's a potential way to work around for that. Romy Gonzalez, they don't have a backup first baseman right now. And Romy, aside from Connor Wong, Romy is the only guy that I could see potentially playing that. I know Refsnyder got some work as a first baseman, first with the Yankees and their organization, then a little bit last year when he was rehabbing. But Romy just feels like the only guy that can do it right now. I know they tried Nick Sogard over there in a couple spring games. I I do question if Sogard is tall enough to play first base.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess if he can, then it's him over Romy, however you want to slice it, the backup first base. It's not a big issue. I'm not freaking out about it because, again, it's your backup first baseman. So, like, you found Dom Smith off the streets. You picked him up off the couch to come in, and he contributed for you and became a cult hero for the team. So you can find a backup first baseman. Then I have Massa rounding out the bench.
Yeah, so a couple differences on mine. Just because I put I put Grissom at second base, I have Hamilton on the bench. And then a guy that has been getting a lot of run in spring training and a guy that I think ultimately will make the major league roster is Abraham Toro, because he's been getting the starts at first base like pretty much every time I've tuned into a spring training game.
Yeah, and he just doesn't have the same versatility as far as the middle infield goes.
I think he can play second. I know he's listed as a third baseman, so you don't have the shortstop there.
But you can, worst comes to worst, he could slide Rafaela there. Like, I could see the case for him making the team.
Yeah, and you also have David Hamilton in my scenario on the bench who can play shortstop. I think he definitely improved as the year went on there last year.
He just looks like he's about to throw his arm out every time he tries to get the ball over
there. Yeah, it's like I would prefer not to see him there, but, you know, maybe you do have some options there. I think Bregman can sneaky play shortstop too.
I think he probably could if you asked him to.
Yeah, but it's like at this point.
He was drafted as a shortstop.
But... Exactly, yeah, that's why I bring it up. I don't think it's going to happen, but, you know, if shit hits the absolute fan and you need him there, yeah, maybe it happens. But going back to Toro, just I have a quick thing on him. Because he's a switch hitter, I always like switch hitters and gives you a little bit more versatility in a lineup. He's really never been an everyday player, but he does have a little bit of pop. I was looking at his stats real quick. Yeah, so he has at least two home runs in sprint, or one home run, but seven RBIs. So he's been, you know, serviceable so far. He's hitting 263. So I could see if he has a decent rest of the spring, I could see him making the roster. And I don't know what Romy really brings to the club, to be honest. Like, there is a little... Versatility is really the only thing. And if you can mix and match with some other guys with maybe a little bit more upside, then, you know, I'm just more okay with that than Romy, who's like, he's fine. I mean, he can give people a day off every now and then, but he's never going to be a factor really in a championship run. So I'm like, why not give another guy a chance?
Yeah, somewhere Rob Bradford is giving you a standing ovation, because earlier in the spring, I don't know how much of those games over on the radio side you've been listening to. I've been listening to a good bit of them because the games aren't on TV for no reason. But they've been, him and Cooper Boardman have been talking about their dogs of spring training. And one of the first games that they had together like a week ago, Bradford was talking about his guy. And he was like, I think Abraham Toro is going to be in the running for the Sam Travis Award, which obviously we remember the Linsanity run that Sam Travis had probably going on 10 springs ago. But that was a guy that he said would sneaky be in the running to make the team. So I know he's definitely going to be pumped to be like, all right, I got another one on the Abraham Toro train.
Might be just two people at the moment, but I don't know. I like Toro. And also another reason I bring this up is I really like hitting with him in MLB The Show. And obviously that's not a reason to put him on the roster, but I would be lying if I said it didn't play a little bit of a factor.
No, that's definitely fair. There are definitely guys, like random guys that I'm impartial to because I like their cards in the show. I really like Ian Happ solely for that purpose. A couple other guys that I'm sure I could think of, but I think that's definitely fair.
So now we can get into the rotation bullpen.
Yeah, I'll kick off my rotation. Obviously, there's been some health concerns with Giolito, Brian Bello, Cutter Crawford. Seems like Bello's going to be good to go. For opening day, obviously things are subject to change. Cora said that he was on a path to being good to go for opening day, but this was 3 days ago, but he qualified it by saying, but this is March 2nd. Lock can change 22 days. Cutter Crawford dealing with it's a knee injury, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So he seems like it's like he's not even throwing or anything. I would be absolutely floored if he was on the opening day roster. So I have him starting the year on the IL. And then obviously Lucas Giolito, I think he threw a 15 pitch bullpen last week, was the latest update on him. And then he was going to ramp up to live BP and so on and so forth. I'm also not counting on him being ready to go by opening day. So I got the locks, obviously. Garrett Crochet, who's been, to steal a line from Lou Maloney, an absolute pig so far. He's the ace that you're looking for. And I know we talked about it. You got to get an extension done with him. Tanner Houck, guy that was, do you think he's going to get the opening day nod because of what he did last year? Or you think it's going to be Crochet?
I think they got to go with Crochet.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I don't think the opening day starter like matters even a little bit.
Yeah.
Because with off days and with injuries and giving guys a blow and whatnot, by the end of the season, your rotation is completely different than what you started with. So I wouldn't be surprised if they went with Houck just to be like, all right, you were our guy last year. You were an all-star last year. Like, you get the nod this year, and then every year moving forward, it's Crochet. But I, again, like I said, I don't think it really matters. It's pretty much symbolic. It's like, all right, here's our opening days. Like, I mean, either way, any way you slice it, it's a lot better than 2 years ago with Corey Kluber getting the nod.
Absolutely.
I mean, that just goes to show you how meaningless it is. Corey Kluber started on opening day for the Boston Red Sox and then was DFA'd later in the season.
What a dreadful year.
And then the third, I have Walker Buehler. He was really good in his first outing on Saturday, a little bit of traction on the base pass, traffic on the base pass. But ultimately, he worked out of it, had a clean slate, 4 strikeouts. Stuff looked really good. Obviously, he's a lock in there. Then I got Brian Bayo in the 4 hole, which I'm a Tristan Casas guy. I'm a Brian Bayo guy. I'm a ride or die for Brian Bayo. And I always will be. I have him in the 4 hole, which I think if he lives up to his potential and he's your 4 starter, you're in a really, really good place. Then comes the 5th starter. We were talking about a 6-man rotation like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
I have Quinn Priester as the 5th starter for the Boston Red Sox come opening day. And obviously it's injury dependent. I think that this last spot, assuming that Giolito and I'm all but certain that Crawford's going to be on the IL, like I said. Mm-hmm. So assuming Giolito starts the year on the IL, it's going to be between Quinn Priester and Richard Fitz for that last spot. I think Priester has shown more so far in the spring. Fitz got roughed up in his first outing and then has been good since then. But I think ultimately you give the nod to Priester because you have more riding on him and that you gave up a not nothing prospect in Nick York for him. And I think the upside's a little bit more with him as opposed to Richard Fitz, who I do like. And I think he's a really good 6th starter when it comes down to it. But right now I give the edge to Priester.
Mm-hmm. Did you want to do bullpen first or should I do my rotation?
I can run through my bullpen. Okay. Cause we kind of talked about it with most of these guys, Justin Wilson.
Right.
So I got Aroldis Chapman, Garrett Whitlock. I got Justin Slayton in the closer role, Liam Hendricks, Luis Guerrero, Matt Moore, and Adam Ottavino. The two big ones are the non-roster invitees and Matt Moore and Adam Ottavino. They'll both need 40-man spots, but we kind of touched on it earlier. They're 60-day IL moves that you can make to clear up those spots, be it Zach Penrod, who seems like he's going to be out for a while, Chris Murphy, who we know is recovering from Tommy John, Luis Perales also recovering from Tommy John. So pretty easy switch for those guys on the 40 man. And ultimately I just think Matt Moore gives you a lefty that isn't complete dog shit like Justin Wilson has been so far. I do like Brennan Bernardino, but that's another guy with options. And I touched on it earlier. It's all of, especially with the stretch that the Red Sox have at the beginning of the season, I think they played 26 games in 28 days.
Yeah.
So going to need to use a lot of these pitchers. So it's all about maximizing the guys with options. So that leaves Josh Winkowski out. It leaves Brennan Bernardino out. It leaves Zach Kelly out. All guys with options. They can start the year in AAA, and then you can mix and match them as you see fit. But ultimately, it just comes down to having guys with options, and it's going to, Cora said it, it's going to be some tough conversations. I mean, it was a tough conversation last year when Joely Rodriguez made the roster over Brennan Bernardino, and everybody kind of lost their minds when that happened. But ultimately, that's the game they were playing. They were playing the roster flexibility game. They were playing the option games. One of those guys had options. The other one didn't. The guy without options made the roster, and ultimately, I think that's what happens with Matt Moore and Adam Ottavino. We haven't seen Moore yet, but Ottavino was clean in his one inning, and he was really good in the EEI booth on Sunday. That didn't factor into my decision. I had him on my original roster prediction before Friday, whenever we recorded last Friday's episode.
Yeah.
So that didn't factor in at all, but just an added bonus.
Yeah.
And he's wearing double zero, which is really cool.
I like that. Yeah, it'll be cool to see zero and double zero both on the roster if it happens. My rotation in bullpen is largely the same. So I have Crochet, Hauk, Buehler, Bayo. I did put Richard Fitz, old Dickie Fitz, in the fifth starter spot to start the season, just because I think he was really good in September of last year. He had a 1.74 ERA in 20 and two-thirds innings. I think he did kind of come back down to earth. There was a stretch there where he like didn't allow a run for a while to start his major league career. I do think just because of the experience, they're going to give him the nod over Priester, but I wouldn't hate it either way. It's just I kind of wanted to go with Fitz because I've seen it a little bit more at the major league level thus far. In terms of the bullpen, I have all the same guys. I just have Hendricks in the closer role because I do think they're going to start the season with a more proven veteran closer. That could change if Hendricks is pitching like he is right now in spring. Then I don't think he's going to hold on to that role for very long, but I do think he's going to start the year as the closer, and then we'll see what happens. But
I'm looking at it now. Richard Fitz didn't allow a run in his first 15 and two-thirds innings pitched.
Yeah.
I guess it could have been longer than that too, because he did give up four in his last start of the year, and I'm not looking at the breakdown, but he went into that last start of the season against the Blue Jays on September 25th with 15 and two-thirds clean.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, that could have been a mix of, you know, major league teams not really having the script on him yet and them figuring it out as the year went on. But I do like Fitz. He's kind of a ground ball pitcher. He doesn't pitch to or get swing and misses that often. He does have, I think I was looking at the stats earlier. Give me one sec. I think he has 4 Ks in spring so far, or he's up to 5 now actually. So maybe a little bit more swing and miss mixed in there, but ultimately, yeah, I do think it will be Fitz. But all of this could be a moot point if Giolito starts the year not on the IL. I also just threw Patrick Sandoval on the IL just to remember that he exists and is a member of the Boston Red Sox. I don't think he's going to factor in very much this year. Maybe later in the year if you're down a bunch of arms and he's healthy.
Maybe a bullpen arm just as it works. I don't see him making starts this year. I think at most he's a bullpen arm, but
no, but those are our roster predictions. This roster is looking a hell of a lot better either way you swing it than years past. It's very exciting because the storylines are only getting more frequent. And, you know, some of those are with Tristan Cassis and his media fiascos, but I still enjoy everything that comes out during the spring. What's up?
It is ridiculous that we can't watch these games. I mean, I understand. I am in the 1% of people that want to watch spring training games. I'm not telling Nesson to send Lou Maloney, Tom Caron, whoever. And I know Dave O'Brien's calling college basketball right now, which I actually like him calling college basketball so much more than I like him calling Red Sox games.
Me too.
Because I think he's a national broadcaster. And he just doesn't bring the same flair that guys like Mike Monaco bring. And I think Monaco would be my choice for play-by-play guy for the Sox because he's from Marshfield, I think it is. South Shore kid, grew up watching Red Sox games. Like, he brings a certain flair to it that, like, I grew up as a fan. I care about this team. And I know Dave O'Brien's a New Hampshire guy, and he cares about the team too. But he seems like much more of a national voice rather than a regional broadcaster, and I think he's a great national voice, and if he is going to stick around, we know that he signed a contract extension with Nesson. I just would maybe like to see now him evolve as a regional broadcaster, and maybe it'll help that the team is going to be a lot better and just kind of evolve, like take that next step into being a homer. I like homers. I love my regional broadcasters being homers. I love Jack Edwards, Tommy Heinsohn, Mike Gorman, Jerry Remy, all of these guys, all these great, even Zoe on the radio broadcast for the Patriots. Like, I want my regional broadcasters to be homers. That's why I'm watching. Everybody watching these games on NESN is biased. And I know even for the gamblers on MLB TV, I watch the home broadcast of the team that I gambled on because I want to listen to them be homers. So yeah. Even people like independent non-fans of these teams that are just gambling on the games, like I assume most people are doing that too. They want to hear broadcasters get excited. And that was a weird tangent to get off when talking about spring training games. But today, they don't have to send them on the road. All you have to do is Tom Caron, Lou Maloney, some cameramen. Garrett Crochet's on the mound. Your big offseason acquisition is on the mound. You have a lot of your starting lineup your likely starting lineup for opening day in the lineup. And instead, I looked. Wicked Bites is what was airing on NESN. What the fuck is Wicked Bites and who is watching it? Like, no offense to the fine people that work on Wicked Bites. It's not ever something that I've tuned into, not ever something I will consider tuning into. It's 1 o'clock on a Wednesday afternoon, and Garrett Crochet is pitching for the Boston Red Sox in a home game at JetBlue Park in spring training. Why is it not on television? Like, I don't understand. It's so frustrating. It doesn't make any sense. Wicked Bites is on TV over the Boston Red Sox. The same owner that owns the team owns this network. Like, what is happening? It's so ridiculous. And I understand that not everybody is going to tune into this game, but I guarantee you more people are tuning in for the Red Sox spring training game on a Wednesday afternoon at 1 o'clock than are tuning in for fucking Wicked Bites. Like, oh my God. Again, I don't mean to shit on the people that work on Wicked Bites, and I'm sure they're all fine folks, but like, give me a break. Like, the starting lineup: Jaron Duran, Alex Bregman, Masataka Yoshida, Trevor Story, David Hamilton, Connor Wong, Abraham Toro, Christian Campbell got in the game. The password, Justinson Garcia started in right field. Even Miguel Blay, who is a pretty underrated and forgotten about prospect, got in this one. And we can't watch the game because we just got to air Wicked Bites reruns. It just drives me insane. Like, even if it's not on, like, NESN Plus, they have whatever this NESN Nation is. They're charging people fucking $40 a month for NESN 360, and you can't even watch spring training games. And not that I'm paying $40 a month for NESN 360, but it's so frustrating, especially for a day like today where both of us, we have the day off. And even when we work during the day, like, I'll throw a spring training game on during the day. Yep. Like I said, I've been listening to every single one of these games on the radio, on the Odyssey app, because I think Cooper and Bradfo are a really good pairing and they do a great job with the broadcast. Not to say that all the guys that have been doing the broadcasts don't do a great job, but I think they've been really entertaining talking about these guys, specifically with Cooper being the AAA broadcaster. So he's seen a lot of these guys and adds an interesting insight. And then obviously I think Bradfo does a great job with the podcast and whatnot. So I've been listening to all these games, but I would like to watch them. And it makes things so much more difficult. I said it, to keep track of who's played and when, specifically pitchers. If you aren't watching them, you can't just be like, oh, I remember watching him however long ago and he looked clean. And another thing that bothers me, and this is another nerdy thing, can we get some fucking StatCast at JetBlue Ballpark? Like, what are we doing here? You're the Boston Red Sox, and I know they have it in the system because these guys can go in and look on their iPads about it, and they have the same mechanics at Fenway where it shows you the velo and then the horizontal break and the vertical break up on the like facades up there. So like, we know that they have the StatCast capabilities. Can we just fucking make it public? Because again, I understand that I'm a massive loser and I'm one of the only people on earth that are going to be looking at exit velos and pitch break and what have you, all the great StatCast stuff for spring training games. But like, it's like minor things like that drive me insane. Like I said, I understand I'm a loser and I'm a nerd and whatever you want to call me about it, but it just bothers me.
No, I mean, First off, shout out to whoever runs Wicked Bites, because Zach just came for your neck for about 5 minutes.
Fine, it's more than Nesson executives, as they can. You can run Wicked Bites for 21 hours a day for all I care. Just let me watch Garrett Crochet pitch 3 innings for the Red Sox. He struck out 7 guys, and we got to see exactly 0 of them.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just looking through the game day here. It seems like about half of the teams have StatCast on game day, yeah, and the Red Sox are one of the teams that doesn't.
It's all the teams that have minor league affiliates play at their ballparks, I think is the qualification, because those are the same ballparks that have the automatic ball strike challenge system.
Yeah, yeah, because the Red Sox don't have that either, right?
No, they don't. And why don't they just have the, I forget what it's called now. It used to be the Gulf Coast League. Maybe it's like the Florida State League or something like that. But why don't they just have the Gulf Coast League Red Sox, the rookie ball team, play at JetBlue? Like, they play in Fort Myers. Yeah. I don't know where they play in Fort Myers, but like, why not just have them play there and get the StatCast and get the ABS system? Like, you're paying for it to use it a month a year. Like, just let the Gulf Coast League team play there.
Yeah, I don't have a lot to add. I don't think I can get as passionate about those takes than Zach. And you said it better than I ever could. But it is annoying that, like, I would love to watch every spring training game on TV. And it seems like there's kind of been a dip in production there, too. Like, I feel like when we were growing up, or, you know, even a couple of years ago, pretty much every game was broadcasted. So I don't know where the drop off happened there.
Nesson is an abomination. Like, again, not to shit on Nesson too much, but like, if you watch the Bruins games, every year the Bruins broadcast gets worse and worse, and not quality of the broadcasters, not quality of the coverage, but camera quality, they cut to a Chipotle beef barbacoa commercial the second that Morgan Geeky touched the puck on a one timer that he scored on. Like, the puck got to Geeky. You saw him winding up for the shot, and the second he made contact with the puck that would eventually end up in the back of the net, it cut to a Chipotle beef barbacoa commercial, and nobody saw the goal. And it does shit like that constantly. The picture is terrible. It skips around. Sometimes the audio craps out. Like, I don't know what it is about Nesson, but their production value, they just... And I don't notice it as much with Red Sox games, and it's probably because John Henry owns the Red Sox, so they're more concerned about that broadcast being better than the Bruins. But the Nesson production, someone at the top needs to be like, all right, this just is unacceptable, because it's been unacceptable specifically for Bruins games for quite some time now.
Yeah, admittedly, I don't watch a ton of Bruins games on TV. I've definitely started more with work, and even then I've kind of noticed it. So, one thing I forgot to do is plug our YouTube channel.
Which,
you know, it's kind of unfortunate to be doing an hour and 17 minutes into this, but that's my bad. Anyway, we do have a YouTube channel now. It is Entering Ken Moore. If you search it up on YouTube, you should be able to find it. We did post episode 7 there. We will be posting episode 8 there as well. And we also have a little bit of a bonus pod type thing going up there as well on MLB The Show 25. Yeah, new venture. Yeah, is the best way to put it. But there has been a ton of MLB The Show news. We're both big MLB The Show guys. We have been for a while. And this game seems like it could be one of the all-time greats, which is a far cry from the past couple of years, where it's been a struggle to even play it consistently, as I'm sure we would like, but the content has just not been it. So we do have, if you're interested in any of that, definitely tune in, definitely subscribe to the YouTube channel, because a lot more content will be coming that way. But either way, this has been a ton of fun as always. And sorry to Wicked Bites. Hopefully
you were merely collateral damage in my rant about wanting to watch spring training baseball. Dude, it could have been anything. It could have been Charlie Moore outdoors. It could have been an infomercial. If it was an infomercial, it would have been, if it was like just a bunch of 30-minute infomercials like Nesson used to run during the day, it would be 10 gazillion times worse than anything that Wicked Bites got. Like I said, I'm sure they're fine people that are working on Wicked Bites. I'm sure they work plenty hard. It's just, you have so much other time to run Wicked Bites. And I'm like, I just don't understand. You own the team. You own the team. You own the network. Just put the games on television. It's not difficult. And I don't want to get back into it. I already got so fired up
about it. Oh, he's getting riled up again.
But apologies to Wicked Bites.
Yes, apologies to Wicked Bites and anyone involved. I would like to clip off that segment, though, and release it into the social media space. But yeah, thank you guys so much for listening. We'll catch you guys next time.
See you.